Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt. They're jaundiced. They're actually counterproductive. And more important than recognizing that they are not part of the solution, but are indeed part of the problem, we've come to realize they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to know why they are working against our interests, how they're doing so. Because exposing and condemning such schemes, no matter if they're political or patriotic, isn't mean, it's caring. In our concluding hour today, as we have each day over the last few weeks, we're going to use evidence and reason to contrast Paul's letter to the Galatians, his first, with Yahusha's testimony and Yahweh's Torah, to see if it is even remotely possible that the author of half of the Christian New Testament, the founder of the Christian religion, is credible. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it's 877-300-7645. My, the news out of Ukraine is amazing. Today, in really horrible fighting, I guess it occurred yesterday, the news reports are coming out today, pro-Russian separatists ambushed Ukrainian troops, killing seven in what was the deadliest day during the, well, it's not the deadliest day. The deadliest day is when the Kiev military went into Odessa and killed about 50 people in the course of an hour. But in terms of reprisals against that, yesterday was an extraordinary day. Moscow, all the while, retaliated against U.S. sanctions by hitting aerospace projects, including refusing to extend the life of the International Space Station. This is interesting because the last time the U.S. decided that they would impose sanctions on Russia, and by the way, while Russia is not an ideal country, the mess that we're witnessing in the Ukraine is occurring because of the United States. The United States is inspiring all of it. It's like we're puppeteers. We inspired the protests that ousted the previously elected government. We encouraged them to take over the government and then flew there immediately thereafter, giving them billions of dollars worth of money and all manner of support, flying the head of the CIA into Kiev, flying the vice president into Kiev, flying the secretary of state into Kiev, with America blaming Russia of what it was actually doing. Not Russia was actually doing, of what the United States was actually doing. But as it relates to the space station, this is the thing that is so troubling to me about American politics, and particularly the present cast of characters occupying Washington, D.C. None of them think. You know, when you start imposing sanctions on Russia, you ought to think about the consequence. One of the consequences immediately comes to mind is that America no longer has a manned space program. We have two astronauts sitting on the International Space Station. We have absolutely no way to bring them home. America has spent a bloody fortune on that space station. I have no idea if it's doing anything of value or not. But we also have two American lives up there. And we have no way to bring them home. After the last set of sanctions, Russia said, maybe America will find a really stout trampoline and have them jump. We just don't think. You know, we accuse them of being a gas station masquerading as a country. And yet, American companies have made a bloody fortune building pipelines and infrastructure in Russia, all of which provided income which was taxed by the United States. You know, We don't think. And we get ourselves into horrible situations. You look at some of the news coming out of Ukraine over the last week. About a week ago, we found that popular opinion in the Ukraine, particularly in the east, was galvanized against the interim government out of Kiev. And the galvanizing moment was what the Kiev government did in Odessa, where they killed 46 people in a matter of an hour. Most of the dead were pro-Russian activists who had barricaded themselves in the city's trade union building, which was set afire by pro-Kiev demonstrators and the Kiev government. Acting government, we should say. You know, if 46 people were burned alive by the pro-Russian separatists, oh, we would have had a conniption. Can you imagine what America would have done if during the protests in Kiev, originally when they occurred back in the fall of last year and the spring of early winter months of this year, if rather than simply protecting themselves from being kidnapped and shot and being the victim of Molotov cocktails, the Ukrainian police had instead taken the buildings that the protesters were occupying, surrounded them, and set them on fire. What would the world's response to that have been? And yet that is what happened to the ethnic Russians living in the east. And what did the world say? Nothing. It continues to side, continues to lavish money and equipment and words of praise and encouragement on the people that perpetrated that grotesque inhumanity. Well, what it did is it galvanized hatred for the thugs that are sponsored by the United States in Kiev. And that's why the ethnic Russians knew that if they took a poll of those living in the south and the east of that country, that it would come out overwhelmingly in opposition to the interim government in Kiev, and that these ethnic Russians and Russian speakers, Russian citizens, all of them, anyone older than 20 was born a Russian citizen, that they would want to separate from the thugs and the misbehaving Americans in the West. And they did. They voted some 95% in favor of separation. They'll vote again in terms of whether or not they will be incorporated into Russia, which I suspect is likely. And yet, the United States is squawking that the vote taken in the eastern part of this temporary country was illegal, just as they said that the vote 97% in favor of integrating with Russia in Crimea was illegal. And yet, hypocritically, America accepted the vote when the Ukraine region decided to separate from Russia 20 years ago. So that vote is binding, but the vote to go back to Russia is not binding. And it's just absurd, the moral hypocrisy that exists throughout all of this. Well, a BBC reporter who spoke to residents outside of one of the eastern towns said that she had been told that what happened in Odessa will never be forgiven. Events threatened, by the way, you know, I don't want to come across as an enthusiast for the pro-Russian separatists. Because when I see Odessa, I cringe. I just read Odessa, and I want to throw up. It was in Odessa that the most grotesque single act of anti-Semitism since the Roman occupation of Judea in 60 and then again in 135 CE, there has not been any single instance of anti-Semitism as revolting as what occurred in Odessa. In fact, since the Roman occupation of Judea and their suppression of a revolt in first in 70 and then in 135 CE, both of the two most gruesome, most deadly atrocities perpetrated against the Jewish people occurred in the Ukraine, with the worst of them occurring in Odessa. So this is not a people that I want anything to do with. You know, if Russia wants them, let them have them. The last thing that I want is to have my tax dollars going to fund these anti-Semitic thugs on either side. But since no one seems to be willing to explain the history of this region or to reveal and expose America's malfeasance in the region or the just utter hypocrisy of the way that the West is responding, we have an obligation to do so, not because we're endorsing one side over the other, but simply trying to expose the truth. And we're doing so more than just to cause Americans to start questioning their government because of the total hypocrisy shown regarding Ukraine, but also because the rhetoric that was emanated out of the U.S. Capitol towards the Ukraine and the provocative nature of Americans' visits to and support of the Ukraine have come very close to igniting world war. And for that alone, this story needs to be told. We'll return to Shattering Myths and the events taking place in the Ukraine when we return after the commercial break. Ukraine's acting president, and we should underscore acting president, they do not have an elected leader. Oleksandr Chernikov has admitted that his forces are helpless to quell unrest driven by pro-Russian activists in the eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk. It is interesting, of course, that throughout the world today, largely, by the way, at America's insistence, funding, and leadership, it is no longer strictly police that are trying to maintain civilian order. It's military units. The Ukraine didn't send its police into the east. It sent its army. You see, its police are not supportive of the acting government. It didn't send its police. It sent its army. It's what happens in Egypt. They don't send police to quell riots. They send the army. In Afghanistan, it's not the police that go in and restore order. It's the American-equipped army. In Iraq, a country that America broke, when there is a terrorist act, it's not the police who go in. It's the army. And in the United States, for those of us who had our eyes opened and watched what occurred in Boston, after two young boys deployed to pressure cookers to maim and mutilate runners and spectators of the Boston Marathon, we sent in the military. And so this is a trend that is happening around the world. It's one being led by the United States. The integration into homeland security to bring in the all of these related departments, everything from the CIA to the FBI to the ATF and everything else under the alphabet soup of government programs is now blending together. The NSA, which is a military apparatus, and the Department of Defense. We are becoming a world where the intervening force in civilians' lives is ever more militaristic. Hello, Glenn. Welcome. What do you think about that? Is that a trend that you're noticing as well?
Well, about the Ukraine situation?
No, that the military is now being called to respond to civilian issues in countries around the world, including the United States.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, we had the concept of posse comitatus to protect us from that, but it's been, you know, all but utterly eradicated at this point. And the military isn't being called in a martial law sense, then the civilian police are being militarized, and then you have this concept of fusion centers tying all the data together. So it's all, and then you have Obama saying we need a civilian force as large as our military. Well, it's all one big synthesis of civilian and military forces.
It is. In fact, a great example of that would be if you go back 20 years in America, there may have been three SWAT teams, and even the SWAT teams were in ordinary vehicles using, you know, ordinary gear. And now the SWAT teams are military units. I mean, they have military vehicles, and they travel as military units. There are SWAT teams in even small communities, much less in large cities.
Well, in the, 70s or 80s when you had the TV show, the SWAT team, the music was famous. The guy showed up in a green step van and had, you know, black jacket and a backwards baseball hat. They were nothing like what we're seeing now.
No, they weren't militarized. Now they're militarized. There is almost no distinction in America now between the military and the various policing agencies, other than in non-significant events. You know, if you run a red light, you are not going to be pulled over by a staff sergeant in the U.S. Army. But when it comes to anything that is significant, there is no distinction. You are going to be inundated with the totality of armed America, which is a blend of all sorts of federal agencies and federal officers, as well as local police and the military.
Yeah, untrained wackadoodles that don't know how to handle guns, you know.
Oh, it's a travesty, and we're having lots of innocent people not only killed, but we're getting more and more belligerent behavior on the part of those wielding those guns. We are within a whisper of being a police state if we aren't already. And by police state, I mean militaristic state. All the while, in a response to a crisis that America has actually manipulated into being. America is responsible for encouraging the pro-Kiev militants who rioted and protested, overthrowing the elected government. We did that because while the elected government of the Ukraine had been entertaining offers to bail it out, it was $30 billion in debt. Country was bankrupt. And so they were entertaining ways to survive economically, because the Ukraine is a completely failed state. In 20 years, they've had two revolutions and just a litany of failed economic conditions. And so they wanted to go back to the IMF to resolve this financial crisis, and all the way people do that today is they borrow more money, which actually exacerbates the problem. But the IMF said, you know, we've loaned you money four times before. Each of the times we loaned you money before, you welched on the deals. You can't be trusted. And so why would we give you more money? when each time we give you money, you deliberately renege on all of the conditions of the loans. And so the Ukrainians went to the Russians. And the Russians had skin in the game, as they say in business. The skin in the game that they had is that the Ukrainians not only owed them a lot of money in terms of gas that they had consumed, but in addition to that, you know, they had their fleets down there in Crimea, and they also had their pipeline that transporting gas, of which a certain percentage of that gas was given to the Ukraine for transit rights. And so they had skin in the game. And they said, okay, we'll loan you $15 billion. Well, America had a conniption fit at that point, just an absolute conniption fit at that point, because in the West, they were still playing the Cold War, and they wanted a former Warsaw Pact region to join NATO, and they wanted to impose Western influence. So America and Western European countries had a conniption fit, and that's what instigated the problem that we're witnessing right now in this failed region called the Ukraine. Well, now in retribution against Russia for a crisis America is responsible for creating, Washington said that they would start denying export license for high technology items that could help the Russian military. Now, that is unbelievably stupid. And the reason that's stupid is because the American military doesn't exist without titanium today. I mean, you remove titanium from everything from aircrafts to ships to weapon systems to satellites, and we're a no-go. We import about 99% of our titanium that is used in the U.S. military, as well as in the production of commercial jets, which is amongst the largest businesses in America, from Russia. So Moscow retaliated on Tuesday. And by the way, these kind of tit-for-tat, when they grow as they're growing and festering now, they often lead to war. Moscow retaliated on Tuesday, casting doubt on the long-term future of the International Space Station, a $100 billion boondoggle, when their deputy prime minister said in Moscow that Russia would reject a U.S. request to prolong the orbiting space station's use beyond 2020. It would also bar Washington from using Russian-made rocket engines to launch military satellites. Now, this is something that I didn't know. But first, before I share that, Russia's comment was, "We are very concerned about continuing to develop high-tech projects with such an unreliable partner such as the United States, which politicizes everything." Wow. What a scathing indictment. Yeah, well put. Then this is the part that I was unaware of. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in the jet and rocket engine world. I just have a fascination with them. I'm a pilot. I love jets and rocket engines. You know, my son is a rocket scientist. He designs jet engines. Now, this is what was really interesting. Moscow's response would affect the NK-33 and RD-180 rocket engines, which Russia supplies to the United States. Now, I did not know that Russia was supplying rocket engines to the United States. And we're not talking about just run-of-the-mill engines that are used on meaningless projects. It's the RD-180 engines are the engines on the Atlas V, which is, you know, the primary launch vehicle used by what's called United Launch Alliance, which is a boondoggle between the U.S. government, the U.S. military, and private industry. I mean, the United Launch Alliance is a $100 billion boondoggle. It's why you see so many large businesses pretending to be so patriotic, is that this is it's gravy train for industry, and it's huge corruption associated with that. And it's a partnership between Lockheed Martin and Boeing that is a virtual monopoly on U.S. Military satellites. So the launching of U.S. military satellites is exclusively by the United Launch Alliance, which exclusively uses RD-180 engines, which are made in Russia. We can't. Not only can't we send and retrieve a person from the International Space Station, we're dead in the water when it comes to launching military satellites. So Russia's saying, okay, this is the way you want to play. Then that's it. We're not sending any more RD-180 engines. We're not sending any NK-33 engines. And it said, unless America is willing to say that they will not be used to launch military satellites, because we don't trust America.
Well, right. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that this is going to be this problem would emerge. You know, the question is, like, who gets the summer cottage and the kids? You know, yeah. Like, we're going to, you know.
Yeah, really. And in this case, there'll be no way to get to the summer cottage. So the kids are going to starve.
Well, it's like you have to sleep in the doghouse, but there isn't one.
Yeah. Now, you want Russia? Go ahead.
Well, we could go back to taking the warheads off of liquid fuel Titan intercontinental ballistic missiles and use those to put up satellites. Like we tried numerous times, blowing up all our very expensive satellites because the things don't work.
Yeah, you know that there are issues with that, and the issues are several fold. One is that you launch a Titan missile, and you could tell the world, hey, don't worry about it. We've got a military satellite on top of this Titan missile. It's really not a nuclear bomb. And you want to put the world on edge. You launch a Titan missile and see how the world responds to that.
Well, they tried numerous times. They blew up numerous.
Oh, yes.
Satellites trying to do that. And
yes.
Then, you know, the French, the Europeans were going to do the Aryan program
And part of the other issue with Titan missile, I don't know if you've ever been in a Titan missile silo, but some of those that have been deactivated, you can actually go inside.
You can buy them now for print.
Yeah, you can buy them. But you can buy one of the silos and live in it. But it is not a it's large enough to lift a nuclear bomb with multiple warheads. It is not really large enough for the kind of satellites that we want to put into orbit.
And it's not
designed to reach orbital velocity. It's designed to be suborbital. That's why it's called a ballistic missile. It's only powerful enough to get the nuclear bombs to a trajectory, to an altitude where they will fall back to Earth based upon the gravity pull. That's why they're called ballistic. You know, the missiles, when they're coming down, have no power. They're just dead weight, and so they're not designed to launch something at the velocity required to achieve orbit. So it's a bad use. Go ahead.
At least the Russians have made their MIRVs maneuverable, which are fine. But anyway, getting back to the news about this story. They said on the news that the Russian part of the space station can function independently of the United States part, but the United States part cannot. And this actually raised a question for me. And I want to throw you, take 20 seconds to set up a tinfoil curveball for you. You can hit it where you will.
Mm-hmm.
This reminded me back in 2012 when we were hearing lots of stuff all over the media about the Hopi, the Blue Star Kachina prophecy, where there's some mention of a dwelling place in the heavens falling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if in 2020 the Russians decide to, and the U.S., it isn't working out, and they go and they unbolt the U.S. section and give a little push with their leg and kick it off, you know, and then to keep the Russian part up there. If we could actually see, I mean, we've had Skylab come down and other things, but we've never had anything up there that actually qualified as a dwelling place in the sky. And this thing's actually like a mobile home up there now. People live in it. And if this thing comes down, now I'm just curious, what do you do with that tinfoil hat thing with a prophecy from another religion that looks like it could be getting fulfilled by something like this?
Well, first of all, that is certainly not something that they were pointing to. So it would be it's only by looking at it in arrears as opposed to in front that you could ascribe it to that. But the reality is that the Russians aren't going to do that. While they may disconnect it, they aren't going to degrade its velocity. They have no means to degrade its orbital velocity, and they would have to degrade its orbital velocity for it to fall. And the reason they don't want to degrade is the reason they don't want to degrade its orbital velocity, because if they simply disconnected the two, continue just to orbit as they are right now, they just aren't connected, but they would stay and orbit together. The problem with the Russians decelerating it is that an object of that size and a relatively low orbit would create is that game called Pachinko where all the metal balls bend?
Yeah,
it would cause a Pachinko effect that would take out satellite after satellite. I don't know if you saw the movie Gravity that came out about a year ago, where there was a Russian move where the Russians maneuvered one of their satellites and it bounced into another satellite and it created the Pachinko effect that took out the space station. But that's what would occur. If you're going to become president of the United States, if you think that you're qualified to lead a nation and that you are not a nationalist but an internationalist, as the Obaminator is, then you really need to be careful. It was Obamination that came out immediately after he was elected to president to profess that this was a new day in Islam and that Muslims would seize this opportunity to demonstrate the greatness of their religion. And since that time, we've had some of the most horrific wars and acts of terrorism the world has ever seen. And now he is flapping his lips regarding Ukraine, a crisis that he himself instigated. And you need to show restraint. Now, I understand that I'm not a person that should be lecturing someone else on restraint, because, you know, here I do a radio program where I talk for 3 hours a day, and very often I respond too impulsively and say things that I probably shouldn't say. But, you know, all I've got here is words and those who listen to this program online. He has positioned the entire United States in an unfavorable position because of what he's done. He needs to think. Can you imagine, Glenn, being the two American astronauts on the International Space Station? They have no way home.
Yes, I'm assuming. Are they the only ones there? I know that there's an American on there.
I think there's seven individuals there. I looked up their nationalities. Yeah. One is Japanese. And I'm assuming that I've not heard the Japanese besmirch the Russians. So I assume the Japanese can pay the $60 million and get a ride home. That's the price. It's $60 million a seat for a ride on Soyuz home. But the Americans, the Russians have made it very clear. We're not taking your $60 million for the 2 million Russians. Now, there are, I think, three Russian cosmonauts up there. There are two NASA astronauts up there. There's the Japanese astronaut, and I think there's one other. And I don't know off the top of my head what nationality.
This is a wonderful chance, though, for the Russians to make themselves look conscientious and magnanimous by doing the right thing and properly transporting the Americans in spite of their incompetent leaders. And it will make them look like nice guys. And after all, it was they who complained about the American politicization of the issue.
Yeah, see,
so
I don't think...
They're kind of smelling like a rose.
Yeah, I think that while that is certainly possible, and it's within Putin's nature to do that, Putin's not going to do it until he can tweak Obama's nose.
He
is going to refuse to do it until such time where he realizes that he has this opportunity to bring them home with the United States admitting publicly that Russia is doing Americans an enormous favor.
Right, and that's all he needs to do is call attention, make sure everybody knows what schmucks people are being, and they look like the magnanimous nice guys. They win the hand, you know.
They win the hand. Well, and by the way, if you look at Russia, they won every hand. Now, it's interesting here. I'm going to share a little bit more from this article that came out today. The assistant foreign minister of Russia, said that Russia is also going to suspend operation of GPS satellite navigation systems on its territory beginning in June.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Yeah.
Russia spends 13 time zones. We spend how many?
Three.
Who's got the geographic advantage on that one?
Yeah. The next thing is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State. This is the part that's interesting. So she is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State. Her name is Victoria Nuland. She obviously got to this position by getting good grades in school, not by attending economic classes. She says, "We've seen the ruble devalue against the dollar by some 20%. And we've seen the Russian bond rating drop in recent months to just above junk." So, under that basis, she says, our policies are prevailing. Now, do you know that when your currency rises and the other currency falls, it makes it impossible for companies that make goods in your country to sell goods in the other country, and it makes the other country's goods vastly more affordable in your country? That's not a good thing, Ms. Nuland.